Welcome to this special Fuller Money Audio covering readers' questions and comments. Subscribers' questions and comments. This is David Fuller recording at 8:11 British Summer Time on the 13th of April. Now, these have been building up. This first batch are from April 5th. Thomas says the surge in the price of palladium over the last few months is more a result of speculative buying by hedge funds than increased demand in the marketplace, according to a report from Johnson Matthey. They also go on to say that in an interview with Oyster Dow Jones, Mr. Coombs, general manager of marketing for Johnson Matthey, said, "We haven't seen serious changes in palladium demand. I think it's funds. That interest has probably been growing as the hedge funds think palladium has some definite upside due to lower prices and a possible switch in the auto catalyst industry." Well, at the risk of sounding flippant, I've seen mostly, almost entirely bearish views on palladium, and I really will start to worry when I start getting bullish views on palladium. Now, the main reason I was interested in palladium was because it was a bargain basement cheap a number of months ago, and the rest of the precious metals sector had recovered quite strongly, as had the industrial metals sector. And there were special reasons for palladium's weakness. But in an environment like this, when there's a scarcity problem for metals, that anything that's really depressed tends to attract additional usage. It's also a deterrent to sales by the people who actually mine and refine the stuff, since they'll hold it back and sell the more profitable metals. Now, in the short term, though, I want to point out that the dollar's rally here is a headwind for palladium, which has had some awfully good gains recently. Tony says, "Having had a couple of years rest, I resubscribed last week, not realizing what a transformation had only recently occurred. Leveraging the power of the internet in this way is a great move forward. Congratulations on creating a really good website. Given its impact, you had to mention the non-farm payroll surprise in last night's audio. The trouble is, analysts are just not looking at the separate survey of households to use to compute the unemployment rate. This showed that the number of unemployed people rose by 182,000 for the month, pushing the unemployment rate higher. Your tentative suggestion about non-farm payrolls being a one-off may be absolutely right. Headline numbers showed big growth in construction, but for how much longer, I wonder? In healthcare and social assistance, who's paying it? And of course, our old friend government. Meanwhile, manufacturing employment grew 0%. Mr. Bush needs jobs in Illinois and the Midwest, and he doesn't appear to be getting them. The spinmeisters, as usual, have it backwards." He then asks, "Do you have a view on cocoa? I feel that the cocoa chart is soft, it's drifting lower and likely to drift a bit further in the short term. As for the employment figures, absolutely, the Bush administration is focused on this and will move heaven and earth to create as many jobs as possible and favorable statistics, and so would any other administration in their shoes. But remember, the U.S. economy has been pumped up by steroids, and the government has been expanding all that fiscal spending, and inevitably some of that it has to seep through to the jobs market." Now, Art says, "I have been a subscriber for about a year and listen to your audio every day. Your site postings and audios have expanded my knowledge of and interest in international markets, currencies, precious metals, and commodities. Took my first small plunge into the futures market. I bought one palladium contract and plan to buy four more in total. You've used baby steps moves and moving stops on your futures purchases, but have never given exact price levels. Would you please cover these two items in the context of Palladium on your audio or website? Yes, I don't give exact stop levels except in hindsight. I give a reasonably clear indication of the overall strategy on that, and if I did do it in terms of exact levels, it would only cause targets in the market for certain dealers, and a bunching of stops by any of us would not be in our mutual interests. So I don't do that. I hope you forgive me on that. I do give an awful lot of information away in terms of exactly how I'm playing markets and why. One word of caution: I hope you have been using trailing stops on that, Art. Remember, I was buying Palladium a long, long time ago, over a year ago, and at much lower levels. I had to wait patiently, but it's now a lot higher at this stage. But I know you wrote this on April 5th, so you had an awfully good gain there, which, provided it was protected, should mean that you don't get into any trouble and, at worst, make some money. Colin says, a little story for your personal edification. I recently agreed, after much hesitation, to trade a new futures account for some friends of mine. On Thursday afternoon, I started with small positions in some of your current trades. One Palladium, one Nikkei, four corn, and one treasury note short. 15 minutes later, the U.S. jobs report came out, followed by Palladium breakthrough news. Corn went up as well, and by late Friday afternoon they were richer by $6,300. Of course, now they think I'm completely infallible, but I had to correct them, tell them who their real account manager was. What a pity you can't get commissions for all your advice, as I've said before. Well, it's a very generous comment from Colin, but don't worry about any of that. What really ought to be of concern to you is that any time money can be made incredibly quickly like that, it can be lost just as quickly, and it's a very good idea to either take the gain or to jam in a stop on that position. And from your own standpoint, what you will soon find is that if you're managing other people's money, well, I hope that you have some financial incentive in actually doing that, because that is a very, very stressful business, no matter how nice they are. Alan says, the big picture Friday audio is a welcome substitute for the written Fuller Money. Can I just ask that any significant shift in trends intraday Fridays be flagged in the brief description of the intervening weekday audios, which would then complete the emulation of the previous Fuller Money Plus? Absolutely, I do that all the time and will continue to do so. Michael says, I'm passing along following article from Bloomberg, which explores the possible underside of China's recent spending. I'll just read a little bit of this very quickly. It's called China's Spending Fury Points to Moral Hazard. This is from Bloomberg, and I quote, China's capital spending is spiraling out of control. The harder Beijing tries to dissuade local governments from wasting money on yet another unnecessary highway or town square, the more inclined they seem to do just that. It's a classic case of moral hazard, a concept economists use to describe why some people burn their own houses. Moral hazards are all about distorted incentive systems. A landlord finds it profitable to torch a house he owns when the insured value of his property exceeds its market value. By the same token, China's local governments have a perverse incentive to waste capital. They are judged by the growth they generate and not by how much capital they use in the process. The cost of their investment excesses is borne by a malleable banking system. It doesn't matter to provincial governors and city mayors that almost half the loans on the books of the four big state-run Chinese banks have already turned bad. Sure, bad loans are a problem, Beijing's problem. Well, yes, but how concerned do we need to be worried about that? In the long term, probably not very much. In the short to medium term, from time to time, obviously. The whole history of emerging markets, and every country was an emerging market at one time or another, but is that they go through some boom-to-bust cycles. China, at least, in terms of the PRC, the ruling government, has the advantage of standing on the shoulders of everybody else before them, and I'm sure we'll have learned something from all that history, but there's always a cyclicality to these things. It's part of human nature, and that's never going to change. It's one reason why we keep getting the same chart patterns showing up from one cycle to another. But I digress. Peter says, Iraq. It seems to me that the Americans are showing the first signs of messing things up really badly in the above country. When mosques are bombed, however accidentally, it seems to be a uniting factor against a common enemy for many Iraqis. I did not think I would see Sunnis and Shiites getting together to jointly take up arms against the Americans. If the general idea of taking up arms to expel the infidel catches on, then God help them. Forces of the coalition are stretched enough already. Okay, this is political, but it does affect market sentiment, so I'm going ahead with this. And my comment is that coalition resolve in the short term and Iraqi resolve in the long term will determine whether or not this country is ready for democracy or on its way back to a totalitarian regime, probably run by the religious extremists this time around. I'm rooting for democracy, but it's all up for grabs, as you know. Thomas says, David, I am delighted with the new format since I find the daily contact extremely helpful. What about posting somewhere a simple summary of your recommendations as of that date? Buy, hold, sell for gold, silver, palladium, platinum, US dollar, British pound, soybeans, tin, nickel, Dow Jones, Nikkei, etc., etc. Well, Thomas, trouble is, there are time availability trade-offs, and the more lists I make, the less research I actually produce. But I do mention absolutely everything I do and why, and I go back and review it a fair amount of the time as well. Paul says, on the 8th of April 04, that would have been last Thursday, were there key day reversals in the June S&Ps and the Dow Jones futures? June S&Ps, no. June Dow futures, yes. They were not big downward. That was not a big downward dynamic, however. But we could have something that looks like a bit of a downward dynamic in here today. This is from David, who says, he mentions an article by Stephen Roach of Morgan Stanley. It's available on the Morgan Stanley website, and he's quoting Roach. As denial deepens at America's central bank, I would be the first to concede that the odds of a prompt and sharp upward adjustment in the policy rate have all but fallen to zero. The Fed remains steadfast in defending its current policy stance, basing its arguments mainly on the new mantra, imbalances don't matter. Senior Fed officials have turned exceedingly aggressive in their efforts to dismiss the perils of current account deficits, budget deficits, savings, shortfalls, mounting indebtedness, and asset bubbles, as was the case in the late 1990s. America's monetary authorities are in effect assuming the inappropriate role as cheerleaders of the new macro. In my view, this smacks of a recklessness that can only end in tears. Well, perhaps Stephen Roach, but to pose the rhetorical question, how else should they actually play it? They're trying to grow their way out of trouble. Malcolm says, SG are listing quite a number of new warrants, and he's mentioned some of them. I won't run through all of these in the interests of time. But SG is a firm in the UK which has a website that posts these warrants. That now, Malcolm is not from SG, but he says, I'm not a big dealer in warrants myself. However, I have hedged my pension fund's dollar exposure in these. But the site, if you want to have a look yourself, I think this is probably only applicable to UK people, but it's http://uk.warrants.com. And David says, You wrote, "I'm not aware of any instance in which a central bank has targeted inflation and failed. All they have to do is create enough money via printing and credit creation. Japan's deflation has proved so hard to crack because the previous BOJ governor, until March last year, Masaru Hayami, refused to reflate sufficiently." Yes, that's David quoting me, and then he says, "But this ignores the fact that you must find willing and creditworthy borrowers for this printing to have an effect, unless, of course, you intend to use helicopters, something they will not do because they would soon print themselves out of work." Thoughts? Well, David's referring to Ben Bernanke's comment and others that saying that they could always draw money from helicopters if they wanted to fight their way out of deflation. But David, you mentioned borrowers. Obviously, it's a lot easier to pull out of the inflation if you get a number of people coming forward who are creditworthy and borrow. And I suspect there are a fair number of those in Japan. But it's not just borrowers, of course. The government also spends the money prodigiously, and that provides more jobs. It provides more profits for businesses, which can then take on additional people and encourage spending. But it's a long, hard battle, but I would say that Japan is winning that battle because the deflation has been persistent, but it's been relatively mild. In other words, they haven't had a depression. This one is lots of Davids in here. Does the validity of job growth numbers influence your thoughts here, or only the market's reaction to those numbers? I understand that much of the job growth was much ado about nothing, more massaging of the numbers by the Bureau of Liars and Statisticians. Cheers. Well, I work primarily on the basis of my big macro view in terms of identifying asset classes that I feel are interesting, either long or short, and then I rely on behavioral technical analysis. In other words, what's the prevailing sentiment? What are people actually saying? That's often a very good contrary indicator. And then I look at the charts. And if the charts produce a dynamic, which I think is a tradable dynamic or a trend-changing dynamic, I am very, very interested in that, whether it's apparently rational or not, or just emotional. And of course, there's a degree of subjectivity in that assessment. The jobs figures were good, however one wants to slice it. Even if there was a smoke and mirrors element to it, and the markets have responded accordingly. And this comment, can any of your charts in daily message be linked or shared with attribution? Today's Russian commodity chart is one I would love to share. Yes, you may indeed do that, and I appreciate the attribution, which is absolutely right and proper thing to do. And I would also say that you can do that by using the email facility to send articles. You'll see the link for that on the home page. That's from a relatively new subscriber. Cormac says, David, I think the U.S. defense status is termed DEFCON rather than DEVCON. I believe DEFCON is an abbreviation for defense condition. Regards and keep up the good work. Well, Cormac, thank you so much. I make a fool out of myself from time to time, and I'll go on doing it in perpetuity if I don't get corrected by thoughtful subscribers. So I do appreciate that. Richard says, I will again state my extreme disappointment at the changes in your newsletter. It has now become a continuous stream of blather from multiple sources, some of which you agree with, some you do not completely agree. When I resubscribed, I was interested in David Fuller's outlook, in other words, a boiling down of all the noise out there and a coherent outlook. Now I have 10 times the amount of reading and 1/10 the comprehension. For others like me who invest for ourselves for the long term and would like your broad world view on investing, we are lost. I now seem to have subscribed to an edited newsletter of others' quotes with annotation by the editor. I felt like asking for a refund of the balance of my subscription, though I would prefer to get a monthly report and even 6 pages of David Fuller's Outlook. Well, I answered this personally, and I'll just give you the gist of this, because I understand the view on this, and I don't take the criticism. Well, I don't take it personally, I'll put it that way. But people didn't know that I was going to change the service to a completely online service, although those who were listening to the audio knew that, but not everyone was listening to the audio. I've done it because it's a much more flexible medium for me. I can do much more. But I appreciate that from subscribers' standpoint, it requires a little getting used to. You have to look around, check it all out. There's far more there than perhaps most subscribers will be interested in all the time. So you must see, pick and choose what's most relevant for you. I would apologize for producing more. But to Richard, I said, please, please listen to the Friday audio, because that long-term summary in detail that I could only produce once a month with the former hard copy format, I now provide at least 4 times a week. It's usually on Friday in the last, but it was on Thursday last week because of the Good Friday holiday. Last letter here. Roger says, David, first I appreciate the light that you shine on the markets, particularly at such an anxious time. Also, I like your shift from Fuller Money issues to an upgraded web and audio commentary. The greater detail of the immediate commentaries outweighs the loss of the more systemic presentation and accessibility of the publication. Second, I have a query about the difference in your strategies for your pension fund and your trading portfolio. You periodically refer to these differences, but I am not aware of you ever having described them in a comprehensive and systemic way. If you have, would you please reference that description? If you have not previously done so, could you please do so now? I would find that very helpful for the management of my pension and trading portfolios. The following is one example of the sort of issue that I would like to get your comment on. You implied in today's audio that, and this is sent out on the 13th, that's today, so I must have been referring to Thursdays, or it was forwarded to me on the 13th. You implied in today's audio that you were ready to chop your long trading positions, including your Asian positions, as soon as you get evidence of a return of the bear market, but that you would hold on to your Japanese holdings in your pension fund. You recently made a similar reference to your intention to hold the Investec Resources Fund for the long term. Is this a correct understanding? If so, would you please explain why you would not also sell your pension fund holdings once you think we have arrived at the edge of a cliff, even if you think that the fall will not be as steep and sustained as for Wall Street? Any other comments, e.g. asset allocation, e.g. do you also hold a high proportion of cash in your pension fund, would also be helpful. I'll try to do the best I can on this, and I can easily understand why a little bit of this may have been confusing. First, I have the pension fund and I have some ISA accounts. Those are tax efficient accounts in the UK, and those are unleveraged positions overall, and I'm not trying to jump in and out of markets with those. I do try to do some medium to long-term trend running, and I know that I do want to be very overweight in Asia overall, and I don't want to be chopping and changing that a whole lot. However, if I did feel that some sort of absolute disaster route beckoned for the markets, I almost certainly would chop those positions out. Where I'm most restricted are in a couple of the smaller pension funds, where the choice of vehicle is just not very great. But again, I could go into cash were I to choose to do so. I do hold a considerable amount of cash for me personally, and I like to have a lot of cash. That may seem like a very inefficient means of asset allocation, but I just like having the stuff. And what I do is that most of the money I make that I live on, and I need to generate about, I'm not going to go into that, but I need to generate a whole lot more than I earn in salary. And I'm not a objects man, and I don't need toys as such. But there are a lot of things that one wishes to do with money, and so on. So enough said on that. So I hold a large amount of cash, and the money that I actually earn for spending purposes, and I don't want to be drawing down on the cash. I want to be always adding to it if I can, but I use leveraged trades in markets. Now, those are the ones, in other words, I'll have futures positions, and I'll do a certain amount of tax-efficient spread bet activity involved, including those futures positions. And that's where, as I say, I make most of my money, but it's also where I'll make most of my losses if I overstay my welcome or get it wrong. So I watch those positions very closely in terms of charts, and those are the ones that I'm going to chop out first if I need to do so. If I have to ride in my pension fund, if I have to ride Japan downwards, for instance, over part of 2005-2006, either because I didn't see the downturn or didn't see it soon enough, assuming there is a downturn, that's not going to devastate me. If I were to do that with a large leverage position, well, I could go bust just like anybody else in that position. I don't know if that's clarified this entirely, Roger, but the trading has to be monitored exceptionally closely. We have to use exceptionally disciplined money control tactics with that, involving stops, and we really do need to move when the picture on the chart changes. Well, that's my view overall, whereas I can ride out a little bit more, perhaps, in a unleveraged position if I feel there's a compelling case for staying there. If I had to do a Rip Van Winkle for the next 10 to 15 years, I would have gold, I would have Asia, and I would have an energy fund. And that's the last of those letters, so I'll just say all the best to all of you.